What a gorgeous, gorgeous Friday afternoon. Good day to get out and go shopping. Not, oh, I can't get a handle on the masses, but I will. That is my plan over the weekend. Matt, Lars, Noah Haynes is at the control. Lars just found this article right before we got on the air, so I don't know if you've seen it or not, but I had to read it like twice to realize that this is just one of the most unbelievable numbers I've seen. When A.J. McCarron took a snap for the Bengals this past weekend, he became the 71st former Alabama player to play in the NFL this year. Just let that soak in. 71 Alabama players played in the NFL in 2023. Man, that, you know what that is above all? What a recruiting tool.
Yeah, that's a stunning statistic. That's a, almost enough to field one team and then half of another team.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how AJ does for the rest of the year if he gets some time on the field with Jake Browning, who's playing great for the Bengals. But I do think AJ, they have confidence in him. That's the reason they brought him in. He's familiar with Zach Taylor and his system, and just based on his play in the USFL, I think AJ still got something left. And you know, he's just a smart football player and been in the league now for, it's amazing to think, about a decade. And I mean, I remember spending a lot of time with AJ when he was at Alabama his senior year, and you know, he was always very good with me. I know sometimes he could be a little difficult, but I think that goes with the territory of being an Alabama quarterback and all of the demands on your time.
Back-to-back national championships. How about
back-to-back
that?
Back-to-back national championships. Yeah. And, just a standout, absolute standout player. And switching gears, I think talk about a standout move. Nick Saban hiring former Michigan linebackers coach George Helo yesterday. And so a little background here. Helo is 36, and he is expected just to begin work immediately as Alabama obviously is getting prepared to play his former team. So he was on the Wolverine staff for the 2021 season and the 2022 season, and he ultimately left the program after last year when Jim Harbaugh brought in Chris Partridge to Michigan as the linebackers coach. By the way, Partridge has since been fired because he was a part of the sign-stealing shenanigans going on. But so what does Alabama get out of this? Well, I mean, even though Helo wasn't on Michigan staff this year, he did work under their current defensive coordinator, Jesse Minner, and he knows the Wolverine system, right? I mean, because he knows exactly what the Wolverines are doing on defense. And you know that Jim Harbaugh is upset by this, but you look at Michigan this year, they rank first nationally in scoring defense, just giving up about 9.5 points a game, second in total defense. And the good thing for Helo is that Alabama is not scheduled, they're not going to start practicing until the middle of the month. Right now, they're just doing lifting, running, some player-led 7-on-7s. So that's giving Helo time to get adjusted and meeting with coaches and giving them a full debrief of what this Michigan defense is like. And it reminds me of another story, and I'll try to make it really quick. A good friend of mine, his name is John Hess. He played linebacker at Nebraska. It was all Big 12. He was on the Packers practice squad all year in 1996. Right before the playoffs started, Denver signed John. And John, it just so happens, he got a perfect score on the Wunderlic, and that is the whatever you can call it, an intelligence test. But he got the highest score the year that he came out, a perfect score, one of very few to ever get a perfect score. Anyway, fast forward just a couple weeks after he signed, Denver meets the Packers in the Super Bowl. And you can see video of John, who didn't dress for the Super Bowl, but he is standing right next to the offensive coordinator and Mike Shanahan the entire game, telling them exactly what the Packers are doing. And you see John, what they're doing on defense. You see John relaying it to the defensive coordinator, and then they are both like yelling out to the defensive players of what play they think is coming because of John, one, his smarts, but also his familiarity with what the Packers did on offense. And so, you know, since he was with the team all year. So do we have a similar situation here? I mean, what do you think of this move? I mean, I don't think this is just merely to get an upper hand in preparing for Michigan. I think there's a chance that Helo is going to ultimately become the linebackers coach because the current outside linebackers coach, Coleman Hutzler, is going to become the defensive coordinator at Mississippi State. So there's a void on the staff. And also Helo began his career as an intern under Nick Saban.
Yeah, he did in 2012. He was there. So he kind of knows a little bit about both teams, but certainly more with Michigan. But I will pose you this question as I play devil's advocate here. Do you think that George Helo is hired had he not been so familiar with Michigan? Or is the intent to keep him around next year, as you mentioned?
Well, I think the intent is to keep him around next year. But I do not think he would have been hired this early unless if he was like, you know, if his background was with that Penn State, for instance. There's like if Nick Saban's already eyeing him to fill this job that is being vacated, and he and Nick Saban has a familiarity with him, then why not bring him on board now? And so it's just, I guarantee you, Jim Harbaugh is absolutely furious about this, but there's nothing he can do about it. It's all fair game here.
The national pundits are pointing at Tuscaloosa and Nick Saban and saying, "Wow, what a brilliant move!"
Is it absolutely a brilliant move?
And it's totally above board. There's no sign stealing. There's just a coach that knows the signs that comes on. There's no electronic devices being used here. They're just use the brain of Coach Helo and see if it doesn't prove to be Alabama's advantage when they play on January 1st. And I can't see that it won't help. Pardon my double negative. Oh, my mom's mad. But he will contribute in many, many ways. And now that this has been done, I would be surprised if he just didn't stay on staff. So it's just another example of the Saban, his ability to play chess.
Yeah.
You know, I quickly go back to the SEC championship game, and I think about him playing chess with Kirby Smart on the timeouts, on the fourth down, and he outsmarted him. And while he certainly knows the X's and O's, there's no question, and Nick Saban can certainly change with the times, his head game and the head games that the other coaches have to put up with this man must just be boggling and frustrating. I can't imagine what Harbaugh did when he heard this. I would like to have been in the room. I would guess something was thrown, but I don't know that for certain. Okay, I, Matt Coulter, co-host of Big Noon Sports, was the first today to bring up the Cincinnati Bengals with A.J. McCarron. And I will be the first to bring up Lars' other favorite topic when we get back on Big Noon Sports.
If you Sunbelt champion Troy meets Duke in the 76 Birmingham Bowl on December 23rd at Protective Stadium. Tickets are on sale now, starting at just $30. The pregame festivities kick off December 22nd at the Bud Light Fan Fest Pep Rally at Uptown with live music, team pep rallies, and everything else you need to get in the game day spirit. This season, fill your holidays with good cheer. Get tickets and more information at BirminghamBowl.com.
Boost Mobile. Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A partly to mostly sunny sky this afternoon, the high 62. Increasingly cloudy tonight, the low 43. Tomorrow, cloudy. Rain likely at times during the day, the high 60. Sunday, rain ending early in the day, then gradual clearing, the high 57. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 62 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage. Merry Christmas to all as you get out and do your shopping. It's a beautiful day for it. James Spann just told you it's 62 degrees. I love this time of year. Lars, I know you do too. But last night, I'm assuming you did, as you said yesterday, you turned on, was it ESPN2? But anyway, Nebraska advanced from the Final Four in volleyball. They downed Purdue. Congratulations to your Lady Cornhuskers. And much success, I guess, on Sunday. Is that when you said the finals would be held in down in Tampa? And who do they play? Do they play Wisconsin or Texas?
Okay, so I hate to do this. Got to do a little fact checking here. They beat Pitt.
My bad.
Yeah, no, that's okay. It's a P.
It was 3-0 though.
Yeah, so it's very rare to get to a national semifinal and to win three sets in a row, right? And Nebraska absolutely just overwhelmed Pitt. Pitt was the top seed in their regional, and now Nebraska faces Texas, the defending national champion, in the finals on Sunday, 2:00 on ABC. I encourage everyone to watch it. I'm telling you, women's volleyball is absolutely thrilling to watch. Last night in Tampa, there were 23,000 there. It was an NCAA tournament record crowd of 19,598 for the two matches. And Wisconsin, I really thought Wisconsin was going to beat Texas and set up a rematch with Nebraska. They played in the regular season, but Wisconsin just kind of put up a dud. But there was so many Nebraska fans there. I mean, they're so passionate about it because it's like Nebraska fans don't have football anymore. You know, it's like that was kind of taken away. And so all of that passion and energy has gone into the women's volleyball team. And it's pretty amazing because, I mean, there are times when they have four true freshmen out on the floor and they're a really young team. Their coach, John Cook, is going to be in the Hall of Fame. And it was just really an impressive display. And it was cool to see a bunch of former Nebraska greats in football players in the crowd. Ndamukong Suh was just red, dressed head to toe in red, and it's nice when, you know, I grew up in Lincoln in the 80s and early 90s when Nebraska won 3 out of 4 national championships and very easily could have won 5 straight and just was the dominant team there for a stretch. And that is, like I said, disappeared. Maybe coming back because, Dylan Raiola, the quarterback who is the number one recruit heading into this year in the nation, who committed to Georgia, he is in Lincoln this afternoon meeting with coaches, and all signs point to him flipping to Nebraska. There'll be more on that. But thank you for giving me these few minutes to wax on and on about Nebraska women's volleyball. That's why I have the nickname Volleyball Anderson, which I gave myself.
don't you have shirts printed up for you and your kids?
Oh, yeah. Hey, you were over at my house. What did I show you?
Oh, Nebraska volleyball shirt.
No, and a Nebraska volleyball cup. Nebraska women's volleyball cup. If I had two, I was going to give you one, but I only have one.
Well, you keep that one, certainly. You're deserving. Speaking of transfer portal, Ja'Cory Brooks, who entered the transfer portal, he, like Rayola, is making a visit. He is in Louisville today, or headed to Kentucky, to check out the Cardinals. Well, one that just popped up right before we came on the air, and I'm not surprised by this, Robbie Ashford has entered the transfer portal. And this will be his third. He went Oregon to Auburn. Now he's going to go someplace else. The guy has immense skill. If Hugh Freeze can't find out a way to use that like he did Malik Willis, if he can't, I don't know who can. I think if I were to advise Robbie Ashford, I'd go to a group of five, you know? I'd go to a school where they could really need me, you know? They could really take all of my talents and weave them into their offense and make a mediocre team really, really good. And I'll throw this out there, you know, why not go to Jacksonville State, Robbie? You stay in state, and, you know, I'm a JSU guy. But a Troy or a South Alabama, you know, a UAB, just to see if you can't finally be able to show all of your wares. Because since being at Auburn, and he didn't at Oregon because he didn't get much playing time, but since being at Auburn, we hadn't seen the Robbie Ashford that, Lars, I really think that can lead a team and offensively put some pressure on defenses. Well, I hadn't seen that yet.
Yeah. If I were to advise Robbie Ashford, if he has dreams of playing in the NFL, I would consider a position switch.
Tight end
or maybe a wide receiver. I know he took reps at wide receiver in September at Auburn. And I don't know if that is the best fit for him, or if he could put on a little weight and be a tight end. But it's pretty clear that for whatever reason, it's just not working out at quarterback. And so I've never met him. I've heard just nothing but great things about Robbie Ashford. You know, even talking to his coaches at Hoover, and I just think he needs to look at either wide receiver or tight end if he really aspires to get to the NFL. And one would assume that that is the case.
Yep, but you know, he's a Hoover guy, right? You know, and he has a lot of support in the state, so. Didn't work at Auburn. I think we all saw that. He saw it. He entered the transfer portal. So, guess that means they'll go into their bowl game. They'll go into Nashville without a really proven or tested backup quarterback. So, then again, so is Texas. And they're in the college football Final Four. Lots to talk about here on this Friday afternoon. And I talked about it briefly yesterday because I watched Bart Starr, America's quarterback. And the producer of that show, the writer of the show, and very familiar to folks in the state of Alabama, Keith Donovan is going to join us right after the break, and we'll talk about that, what it meant to him. Lars, I know you've known him for a long time because he's one of your own, right? He's published quite a few books.
Yeah, and he is a really talented author, writer. And I've never actually met Keith, but I've been a big fan from afar for a long time.
And we'll talk to him on the other side of this break. You're listening to Big Noon Sports, presented in part by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker.
Lee Thompson is known as the Bama broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Or Big Noon Sports coming up.
Back on Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage. Our next guest, longtime Alabama guy, grew up in North Alabama in the Athens area, so we have that in common. I grew up in Huntsville, Keith. I don't know if you remember that or not, but Keith Donovan, who is a producer, longtime writer, a couple of books on Coach Bryant, more recently a splendid effort in capturing the life of Bart Starr on and off the field. But that was turned into a wonderful documentary, which I watched the other night in its debut, called Bart Starr, America's Quarterback. All that being said, Keith, just how the heck are you? You got all your Christmas shopping done?
Oh, man, is it Christmas yet? I'm telling you. Yeah. No, I'm way behind, man. I tell you, it's good to be with you guys today, though.
Keith, my partner, is a longtime colleague in some sense. I guess that you've never met personally. He's Lars Anderson, but he's
well. We know each other by reputation. I'm a big fan of Lars.
I'm a huge fan, Keith. Huge fan. I've read all your work, and you know, my first question is how did you birth this baby, so to speak? Because it is hard to get a documentary made, and I've been down that road before, and you know, I've been able to get one onto Showtime. Very fortunate about that, but it's very difficult. So can you just take us through the process of taking, you know, your book and your background with Bart, and then turning that into this amazing documentary?
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. You know, it's a long, kind of circuitous route. First of all, in terms of Bart, you know, I grew up, as Matt said, in Athens, and started covering the SEC really young, and got to Alabama and so forth before covering national college football. I didn't remember Bart as anything basically more than a guy in the record book. And I don't have any personal memories of the Ice Bowl. My, you know, football memories began basically with Joe Namath and Johnny Musso and guys like that. So I just missed Bart. So I didn't know that much about Bart's story, except that, you know, the championships and the, you know, Alabama connection and so forth. So I started writing the Bart Starr book, not knowing whether he would cooperate or not, back for St. Martin's back in about 2006. And of course he did. And we, you know, developed a relationship, and I just, you know, really grew to like he and Jerry very much. They're just such quality people. And so one thing led to another. And, you know, I've moved into documentaries the last 15 years, you know, still doing books as well, but we've done a couple of smaller documentaries. And so this was just kind of a natural progression. But I've had a relationship with the networks, particularly ESPN, for a while now. And, you know, we started discussing ideas, and this is the one that, that just kind of connected, because it, you know, as Lars, as you can understand, you know, it's a documentary and a book are different, but they both have to have great narrative hooks. They have to be, you know, cinematic in a sense, and that, you know, how could you possibly have more tension in a story than Bart Starr? And also the fact that a lot of this is just unknown. So all these things bringing to bear, it was kind of a perfect storm. And, you know, we were my partner on this, Fritz Mitchell, who was just one of the best documentary filmmakers in the business. He did Saturdays in the South, and I worked with him on that and a number of other things. We were, you know, gratified that that ESPN Films, you know, greenlit this project and let us tell the story.
Quick follow-up. Was your editor at St. Martin's Mark Resnick by chance?
No, actually, it was Pete Wolverton.
Oh, Pete, okay. In what was it like getting to know Bart Starr, and what surprised you not talking about the documentary, but the book that you wrote? What surprised you the most of what you learned about Bart and the character of the man?
Well, I came in a little bit cold because you know, the thing is, I would say just how down to earth he was. You know, people, before I got to know Bart, people always said that. But, you know, like you have written about a lot of sports stars and a lot of people, you know, out of sports. And you know, I've never met anyone who is just as genuine, as down to earth, as unpretentious as Bart Starr to have been at that level of achievement. You know, for instance, I mean, when I was a young guy, you know, walking into Coach Bryant's office, Coach Bryant had a presence. And, you know, sitting down with people like, you know, Willie Mays or Ted Turner or someone of that ilk, they had a presence. Bart had a presence, but it was just, he was a guy who captured this certain everyman quality that it wasn't, there was nothing fake about it. Now, he was, he had this kind of military bearing about him. But I guess to really answer your question, the thing that surprised me most was that just that he was so humble about his accomplishments in real life. You know, it's the point of he and his wife, of course, Terry is still doing great. And I just had lunch with her the other day. She's 89 years old. I hope I don't get in trouble for saying that. But she's still doing great. And she was just this remarkable, had this remarkable, you know, bond with her husband for all those decades. But one of the things that you kind of look for that jumps off the page, I spent a couple of days back in the late 2000s traveling around to feed stray cats with them. So here I am, I'm helping Bart get the kitty food out, the Super Bowl MVP, the MVP of the first two Super Bowls, and he's going around the south side of Birmingham feeding stray cats, and it was surreal. I mean, you know, Matt, I know you knew Bart through the years. I mean, it was just there was something about this guy was just different. You know, he had no ego, and so that, given the type of people that we've written about in the past, it was just kind of remarkable.
Bart never called for or expected attention. You know, he could walk into a room, and if you didn't know him by sight, he'd pretty much be a wallflower.
Totally.
And it was very unusual, because when I met him, I just went into a gush-a-thon. This is a guy that I watched with my dad when I was a little kid in the 60s, and I just I was in awe, and then he was in awe of me. He knew what I was doing. So you can imagine what that meant to a young reporter when he calls you by name. And that's just the way he is. And by the way, I'll throw this in too. I've had the opportunity to be around Sherry many times too. And she's one of the reasons Bart Starr was so successful as a quarterback and as a person. Now, in all the things that you put into this documentary, again, marvelous, you can't tell his life story in 60 minutes. This is maybe not a difficult question, certainly not a criticism, but what got left on the edit room floor?
You know, that's a good question. We knew coming in we had to tell a very compact story. You know, just like people ask me all the time, well, you know, how much of what you find out about a subject when you're writing a book, how much do you use? And honestly, my stock answer, and this is true, and I bet Lars would say some of the same thing, I probably end up, I want to learn as much about a subject as I can. And I probably, in a typical book, probably use 5% of what I found out about a subject. Because you're, first of all, you have to be very focused, and really, you have to be very focused about what story you're going to tell. And if you start diverging from that, then if it becomes unfocused, then you're in trouble. So there were a few things that on the, you know, details of the Ice Bowl. I mean, we first of all, we would have loved to have told a lot more about the Ice Bowl. We had, you know, a lot more good stuff there, but, you know, there are all sorts of limitations there. But we wanted to use the Ice Bowl, for instance, I think that was a different way of telling it. We went back and forth on the ways to tell it. And Fritz and I, you know, discussed this over a period of basically a year, is if you tell the Ice Bowl story, you hit the viewer in the face with this, and then you get to that line at the end of the section, this was a metaphor for Bart's entire career, then that's a light bulb moment, hopefully for the viewer, and you got them hooked at that point. So there are all sorts of things like that you do in documentaries that has a that have a something of a basis in the book, but you know, a documentary is more visceral. You gotta, you know, I've been, it's gratifying the last couple of days when people that I trust have said, hey, you made me cry. Well, as a filmmaker, that's what you want.
I made it until about 56, and then you brought in Roger Schultz, which just kind of shocked me. I love Roger, and he did a great job on the documentary, but yeah, I was pretty weak at the end.
Scene of Bart finding his son and the description, just that's what it destroyed me.
Keith, we haven't talked enough. Can you hang on through a break? I know I didn't ask you this when we communicated earlier. All right, good, because we're going to get a little closer to Tuscaloosa, talk some Alabama football, too.
Okay.
You are indeed a historian. Keith Donovan, Bart Starr, America's quarterback, will continue with us on Big Noon Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A partly to mostly sunny sky this afternoon, a high 62. Increasingly cloudy tonight, the low 43. Tomorrow, cloudy. Rain likely at times during the day, the high 60. Sunday, rain ending early in the day, then gradual clearing, the high 57. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 62 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
The name of the documentary is Bart Starr, America's Quarterback. It is really, really worth more. It's worth an hour of your time, I promise you that. I text everybody I know and said, you got to watch this. So do watch it. Keith Dunnett was the author of a Bart Starr book and then producer of the show. And you grew up in North Alabama, in Athens. You grew up in a media family. I had the pleasure of working with your dad, Bob, on many occasions. So when you were that young, you were obviously exposed. At what point did you just become, what point did you become an Alabama fan?
Oh, gosh. Maybe birth? honestly, I was influenced certainly by my dad and my five older brothers, so I don't think I had a chance in terms of having that. But my, you know, there's a picture of me when I was 3 years old. My dad, among other things, in the radio business, was a local play-by-play guy. And there's a picture of me when I was three wearing an Athens College sweatshirt. And that was with the great local NAIA basketball team at that point. And the caption was that he looks like he wants to be broadcasting games with his dad. So I started early.
Keith, you've written so many terrific books. The Missing Ring, Coach, which I view as the definitive biography on Bear Bryant, on Bart Starr, Joe Montana, You've gone into the military and written The Spy Pilot in a book called Speed, which is awesome. Do you have a favorite? And also, how did you get into book writing?
You know, I hope that my favorite is the next one that I'm doing, Lars. You know how that is. You don't want to choose Keith, among your children.
Keith, hang on. Do you guys have some kind of little special code? Because that's the exact answer that Lars gives every time anybody asks.
Is that right? I swear I didn't know that.
Word for word.
Yeah, and I also say I know I have a good book when I only use 5 to 10% of my notes, which is what you just said.
Well, and I will tell you, I was so, you know, I've been so extraordinarily lucky in my life. You know, I started real young as a sports writer when I was 14 and got to Alabama because of Coach Bryant and all that. But I was lucky enough that I got to accomplish a lot of my, you know, goals in my 20s. I got to work for, you know, Frank DeFord at the National when I was 25. And out of that, I was able to, you know, get an agent. And actually, the first book I sold actually was the book that became The 50-Year Seduction about the rise of television in college football. And out of that, I sold my Bear Bryant book. But I was exceedingly fortunate that I could make that transition from sports writing into books. And then I owned magazines and worked in the magazine business for a long time after that. So I just kind of hit it just right in terms of transitioning into books, which, as you know, Lars, is very, very tough to do. It's getting tougher by the day.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When you wrote the Bear Bryant biography, what were the biggest challenges of writing Coach?
I think probably a lot of challenges on that. Probably at that point, because we're talking about, I got the contract on that in 1994. So he had just been dead basically a decade at that point. And having grown up, you know, Coach Bryant was one of my idols growing up, and then having covered him early on when I was a teenager, and all the, you know, I mean, to be quite honest, I wouldn't have gotten to the University of Alabama but for Coach Bryant. I'm very honest about that. But I guess probably the most challenging thing was checking my personal story at the gates, because I was determined to write an objective biography, and hopefully I did. But also the flip side of that is hopefully that I understood the culture and the climate better than an outsider. So hopefully I, you know, straddled that line. You know, when you're talking about, when you're writing about someone who was a hero to you growing up and you understand what he meant to the culture of your home state, that's a challenge. Unlike, let's say, Joe Montana, who I didn't have any personal, you know, relationship with Montana, and I covered, you know, the NFL in those days and so forth, but that was a completely different situation. So, you know, it seems like yesterday that I wrote that book. We're talking about, you know, 30 years ago now.
You mentioned a couple of times that you would not have ended up at the University of Alabama but for Coach Bryant. Was that just based on the fact of your admiration, or did he have a hand in you going from Athens to Tuscaloosa?
Oh, he had an absolute hand. I covered Alabama when I was starting out for the little small newspaper, weekly newspaper in Athens, then before moving to the Decatur and Huntsville papers later on in high school. And as a result of my early start, I got I had an interview with Coach Bryant in the summer of 1982, and long story short, he liked me, and the sports information director knew at that point that I was looking for a way to pay my way through school. So because of that, I got a full scholarship, a full athletic scholarship, at the University of Alabama. So that's in my first 3 years in school. Before I, you know, transitioned into working for the Crimson White and then the paper in Birmingham in my last 2 years in college, that's how I paid my way through school, Matt. I mean, I worked for the football, basketball, swimming, and baseball teams, traveled with them. I ran the basketball program and so forth. But no, that Coach Bryant changed my life.
Keith, going back to the Bart Starr documentary, in your mind, and this is a tough question, what is the meaning of Bart Starr and his life, and what do you hope that viewers get out of this documentary?
That's a really good question. I would say two things more than anything else. One is the power of resilience. 17th round draft choice, who was essentially abandoned by his college coach, who was doubted by, you know, his father, by his Alabama coach, by Lombardi to begin with. The power of resilience in the face of doubt. The other is the power of unconditional love. He didn't have it from his father, and therefore the doubt swirling and trying to get that approval from his father, and Cherry coming into his life and giving him the unconditional love that he needed. And in the end, I think she was more responsible for his success in Green Bay than we can ever know. And also, she helped him survive the loss. I think she helped him deal with the loss of his brother and how that redounded throughout his life. And she helped him deal with the loss of his son.
Keith, I think we could keep going and going and going, but unfortunately, time is relentless, or not relentless. But we appreciate the opportunity, and urge everybody to watch the documentary, Bart Starr, America's Quarterback. But just going out, can you give me a quick go on Keith Donovan's view of the Alabama Crimson Tide now?
I'll tell you what, Nick Saban, I think, has done his best coaching job. How about that? We don't know how it's going to turn out, but he's done one hell of a job this year.
No question about it. And that story yet to be finished. So we'll see coming up here in a couple of weeks. Keith, let's do this again, because it's been too long. I enjoyed our relationship back in the day and want to continue it. Thank you so much.
Really
sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Time. Really appreciate your time, Keith.
Yep.
You bet. Enjoyed it.
Us too. Keith Donovan. We'll be back with the second hour. We're going to talk some basketball as Alabama's traveling back to your home state. They're going to Omaha to take on the Blue Jays of Creighton. So Brian Passink will be along with that. And got a couple other stories we really need to get into, and we'll do that on the other side of this break as you listen to Big Noon Sports.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app. From the Fox Sports studios in Los Angeles, here's Nick Cope.
Some fresh news in the NBA involving the 76ers. ESPN reporting team president Daryl Morey has agreed to a contract extension running through the 2027-28 season. Morey currently in his fourth year with Philadelphia, and the Sixers are off to a 16-7 start this season, tied for third in the Eastern Conference. In baseball, reports say the Dodgers and pitcher Tyler Glasnow are finalizing a four-year, $110 million extension. Once that deal is complete, the trade sending Glasnow from the Rays to Los Angeles will be official. Reports say the Royals and outfielder Hunter Renfro have agreed to a two-year, $13 million deal. Reports say the Royals have also agreed to a deal with pitcher Michael Wacha, 2 years, $32 million. And in the NFL, Dolphins coach Mike McDaniel said receiver Tyreek Hill will not practice today with that ankle injury and is considered questionable to play this weekend.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside, this is Big Noon Sports.
Sing, Union Home Mortgage. It's Noah, it's Matt, it's Lars. Bottom of the hour, Brian Passink from the Alabama Crimson Tide Sports Network. Basketball will be joining us as Alabama still struggles to find their identity. Maybe they'll find it in Omaha as they take on Creighton. I believe is now ranked 8, 9, 10, something like that. So Alabama's got what they had, Purdue, which they played them close, lost. They've got Creighton. And then next, number one team in the nation, Arizona. So, good grief. You know what? They'll be battle-tested when the SEC rolls around. So, we'll talk about that. Lars, in another story that I was looking at this morning, you know, I'm an old guy and getting to be a softy, but it brought a tear to my eye, a tear of joy. I don't know if you saw this, but Quinnen Williams, who, of course, Alabama remembers, he was a nightmare on centers in the middle. With the Jets, making big money. He has donated $2.5 million to single parents in Birmingham. Wow. I mean, that's not like just stroking a check for that's, and I hope I read it right, and I hope I'm reporting it right, but $2.5 million, wow. Good for him and good for the single parents in Birmingham. He always kind of had this boyish charm to him and still does, but it's just good to know that good people do good things.
Yeah, and he is a very, very good person. And this is really hard to do as someone who lived in New York for a long time, but he has absolutely captivated the New York media. They love him. Love him. Because he already has proven that he's worth every penny of the four-year, $96 million contract he signed in the offseason. He is easily, Aaron Rodgers aside, because Aaron Rodgers only played, four snaps, but he's easily the best player the Jets have had since Darrell Revis, a young Darrell Revis. He is absolutely dominant. And for one reason or another, even though he's playing in this the biggest media market in the country, he is not getting the recognition he deserves. And that's probably how he likes it, frankly. It boggles my mind, but as of right now, he's not even in the top 10 for Pro Bowl voting at defensive tackle. And I don't know. You watch him every Sunday. He's dominant. He is absolutely dominant because he attracts a double team every play, and it frees up other guys to make plays. PFF, Pro Football Focus, and we've talked about them a little bit, Matt. It's a company run by Chris Collinsworth, and I think they do a terrific job of sort of analyzing and rating players. They have him rated as the number two interior lineman in football, behind the Giants, Dexter Lawrence. He's rated number one against the run. He has 46 quarterback pressures as an interior lineman. I mean, that's just insane.
Double teams.
But it's weird because he's got this like Reggie White kind of strength. There could be a guy in front of him who looks like, you know, a bodybuilder. And somehow Reggie White would out-muscle him. That's what Quinnen Williams does. And he, it's like he's bench pressing grown men, 350-pound grown men all day when he plays. And the descriptive word when he was at Alabama that a lot of writers used was he's slippery. But now it's like strength and he's slippery. What do you remember about him at Alabama? And also, what have you seen out of him being with the Jets?
Well, I don't know if I can go add any more to what you just said. I just, like I said when we first started this conversation, you know, remember when he's wearing the braces and he had that boyish look
yeah.
on his face?
Oh, yeah.
He just
yeah.
looked like a little kid unless you were lined up at guard. And then he destroyed you. And I just remember him being such an integral part of that Alabama defense. And while he made a lot of plays, I can remember him coming through and under and sacking quarterbacks. Just extraordinary effort. And he has yeah. taken that to the next level.
Exactly.
Every single snap, he played
every snap.
Like his hair was on fire.
The Jets can be down by 20 points in the fourth quarter with 2 minutes to go. And Quinnen Williams will chase a guy 40 yards down the field and make a freaking tackle as a interior defensive lineman. It is what you just said is perfect. All effort, all the time. And his teammates absolutely love him because he is such a hard worker. He's humble. And he's just a good person. He's just a good young man. And the reason we're talking about him is illustrates that.
Yep. And now he illustrates off the field what kind of a person he is. And this is nothing new. About 3 or 4 years ago, he donated $50,000 at the time to the very same cause, and that's single parents in the Birmingham area. And that's another thing. He comes back, he gives back to where he's from, you know. So anyway, that I just loved that story. A couple of other NFL drops here. Raiders beat the Chargers 63-21 last night. At one point it was 63-7. But guess what happened this morning? Head coach of the Chargers, Brandon Staley, was fired. Of course, he didn't have his starting quarterback. He's out for the year.
As was the GM. The GM was fired as well.
The GM was fired, too. But, they didn't have Herbert last night, but I'm not sure that would have made any difference at all. Man, Raiders just caught lightning in a bottle.
You remember, okay, so this has never happened before in NFL history. And the NFL's been around for, what, 103 years or something? The Raiders were shut out last week. They got beat 3-0. and the over-under on this thing was like 36 or something. At halftime, it was 42-0. So what does that show you? It shows you that San Diego, the Chargers, they absolutely have quit. Those players have quit. And you look at, I was seeing... just different clips of some DBs last night for the Chargers. They absolutely just didn't care. They didn't care. Like a safety who could have made a play on a corner route or to the front pylon. He just absolutely jogged and then kind of walked. I mean, he maybe could have made a play, maybe not, but he didn't even try. And so when you see that the players have quit, you absolutely got a clean house. And so, interestingly, they're bringing in Brian Flores. And by the way, that record that they made, that they just set, was a team getting 0 points 1 week and then scoring 63 the next. That's never happened before. And so Brian Flores.
I would think so.
Brian Flores, who's the defensive coordinator at Minnesota, who's playing the Bengals tomorrow, he has been named the interim head coach, which I don't I can't ever remember this happening, where you pick a guy off of another staff to be the interim head coach. So clearly they had their eye on Flores, who was at Miami for a while and they got fired. But it looks like the owner, Spanos, wants to see, okay, what can Brian Flores do for these last couple weeks? And is he going to be our guy? I mean, do you remember a time when an interim head coach comes from outside of the organization?
Not any more than I can remember a team going from 0-63. Two historic, kind of unfortunate issues taking place in the National Football League. All right, I'm going to dive into this for just a minute because, quite honestly, I think we're rather weary of the Florida State. Now Georgia's in on it, so we'll touch base with that when we get back, but probably not very long. As you listen to Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing Union Home Mortgage.
Champion Troy meets Duke in the 76 Birmingham Bowl on December 23rd at Protective Stadium. Tickets are on sale now, starting at just $30. The pregame festivities kick off December 22nd at the Bud Light Fan Fest Pep Rally at Uptown with live music, team pep rallies, and everything else you need to get in the game day spirit. This season, fill your holidays with good cheer. Get tickets and more information at BirminghamBowl.com.
Oh. Laura Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
We're making 0.9 Tuscaloosa weather.
A partly to mostly sunny sky this afternoon, the high 62. Increasingly cloudy tonight, the low 43. Tomorrow, cloudy. Rain likely at times during the day, the high 60. Sunday, rain ending early in the day, then gradual clearing, the high 57. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 64 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
Portions of our show are brought to you by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker. Lars Anderson, Matt Coulter, and Noah Haynes as we wrap up this week and continue to get closer and closer to Christmas. You know, this stuff between Florida State and now Georgia's in on it and threatening to boycott the Orange Bowl. And, hey, I know they're upset. You know, I would be too if that were my team. But now the Florida Attorney General is looking into an antitrust possibility here in the selection. Then Florida Representative Dick Scott goes off on an absolute tirade and cites the lack of control, or perceived or not, with the FBI, the Department of Justice and all that. And then he says that this is just another example of things not being good for our country. Man, our country's got far larger issues than this, dude. And now Georgia representative is asked that, is petitioning, whatever, to make the Orange Bowl part of the playoffs. What the you know what? What, huh? That just doesn't make any sense. But in bringing up these three specific points, I'll end it by saying, I'm just really tired of this, Lars. I'm not even sure why I brought it up.
Yeah, I am too. And I think it's wearing thin with pretty much everyone else across the country, because if you pay attention to college football, if you pay attention to sports, what's the likelihood of Florida State beating Michigan in the Rose Bowl with a backup quarterback? I mean, they've shown nothing offensively that they can hang with Michigan. And as we talked about earlier, Michigan, number one defense in the country, right? Number one overall defense in the country. These guys are really, really good. And if Florida State goes out there and it goes out to Pasadena, they're going to get shellacked, you know, 49-10. And the last thing that college football wants, needs, is another dud of a game in the semifinals or the finals last year, you know, TCU. So I absolutely think that the college football playoff committee got it right. It's really interesting to hear. And we love Tim Brando. We love Tim Brando. But he was absolutely outraged that Alabama got in. But then
turns around and picks him.
And picks Alabama.
Which I thought that was interesting. And then really, you can separate the two. You really can, because you put that the fact that Florida State's not in. Now you got to concentrate on the games. But when he was with us earlier in the week, I almost got the feeling that he wanted everybody to know that he picked Alabama.
Yeah, it's yeah. I just look, if you just use your eyes and the little common sense, who deserves to be in? Alabama.
Well, it's not deserves. I'm not correcting you. I'm just saying it's not who deserves. It's who's the best team.
Yes. Yeah. And,
I knew what you meant.
No, but you are absolutely correct, because it deserves. Probably Florida State deserves.
Yeah.
Deserves absolutely was the wrong word I used there. Which team is the better? They're trying to get the four best teams, not the four most deserving teams.
And, you know, if you're going to make an argument for a better team, I think Georgia would be ahead of Florida State. Because Georgia's a better football team. And I think we're going to find that out, although when they play in the Orange Bowl, a lot of these players are either entering the transfer portal or skipping the bowl game in preparation for the National Football League.
Yeah, and I know Florida State right now is actively looking for a quarterback for next year, and we'll see what happens. And Dylan Raiola is trending on Twitter. He is in Lincoln, and I honestly think he is gonna flip, and that's gonna be a blow to Kirby Smart, because Raiola was the sort of the long-term guy, sort of projected to start 2 years at Georgia. And he was the anchor of that entire recruiting class. And look, none of these guys have signed yet. Is it possible if Raiola leaves, things unravel a little bit at Georgia, because you are losing your marquee recruit to Nebraska? I mean, I think it's possible.
Yeah.
I mean, not completely unraveled.
But I think he's got something. But, you know, Georgia's got Beck coming back, and, you know, he's good for another year. And they'll find somebody else, because Georgia's Georgia, and they can recruit. Hey, talking about bowl games, I want to remind everybody the 76 Birmingham Bowl is 1 week from tomorrow. So you need to be getting your tickets to watch the Trojans and the Blue Devils as Duke and Troy play at Protective Life Stadium, Protective Stadium. And that game is slated for 1 week from tomorrow at 11 o'clock. So it's a good time of day on Christmas Eve where you can get out in the morning, go to the game. I think I've looked at long-range forecasts. It's probably going to be a lot like it is today, which is darn near perfect. But get your tickets now. Some of them are as low as $30. I mean, you can't beat that to see a bowl game. And if you've never been to Protective Stadium, you need to go for that reason alone. It's just a fantastic sight. But also, 1 week from tonight, they'll be having the Bud Light Fan Fest on Friday in a cool area of town called Uptown. So all of that's going on with the 76 Birmingham Bowl. And just wanted to make you aware of that so you can go ahead and get your tickets now. So go to the Birmingham Bowl. All right. One other thing, Lars, because we got basketball to talk about, but this is NBA, which we don't go very often. I know you follow it closer than I do, but Draymond Green, has he lost his mind? Did you see the punch he threw at Yusuf Nurkic?
I did. And
he's been suspended indefinitely, by the way.
Yeah. He needs to work on some anger management things, obviously, and it's going to be a while before he comes back, or if he does. But Nick Saban did his regular appearance on Pat McAfee's show. And Noah, I would love to play it going out because there's about a 2 minute clip here that I think is very revealing, and it just makes you love the fact that Nick Saban is the head coach of Alabama even more. So Noah, can you play that for us?
Cue it up, roll it, or roll the break, whichever you can do.
Coach, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but your best recruiting may have, you know, come from a photo of you in a Ferrari with your triple styrofoam cup and America's Best being absolutely littered in your side door. If you weren't aware of that, just know, yeah, everyone's talking about it, absolutely loving it. Here's one of the videos. I assume that's one of your 6, 7, 8 Ferraris. It looks amazing. Were you aware of that photo kind of going viral a little bit? And did you know that you probably got about 5 5 stars committing to your school today because of it?
I don't know. They all want to drive it. But look, I got kind of hoodwinked into that. You know, one of the guys that was visiting, we always have the players over to the house for breakfast on Sunday morning, and we walk out and they see the car and they all, you know, ooh and all about the car. And they said, why don't you start it up so we can see what it sounds like? So I went and got the keys and started it up. I didn't know the guy was going to video it and it was going to go viral, but you know, that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
You know, we have the parents over on Saturday night, so they would have been much more interested if they'd have caught me line dancing.
I've seen you in some living rooms, Cooper, shuffling out there. You got some rhythm, huh? West Virginia boy got a little rhythm. And the triple styrofoam cup.
Ooh.
I mean, across all demographics, that was beloved. You know, because that's either lean, which we assume it's not, or that is, I mean, Coach, the more we learn about you, I think the more we love you.
Yes.
And that you need to understand that. I assume you've been very guarded for a long time because you're ultra competitive and everything like that. And whenever you said you would come and do this show every single week, a lot of people said things like, oh, he's not his fault. It's like, people love you, Coach. You know that because you're still that same West Virginia boy who just so happens to be the greatest of all time. It's a cool thing. We're very grateful for that this year.
Well, you know, some of the things I learned growing up in West Virginia in a coal mining town have been very beneficial to, you know, getting to know how to really talk to, articulate with, communicate with, you know, everybody, no matter where they come from, what their socioeconomic background is, because there's a lot of good people in West Virginia, and I learned a lot of good lessons growing up, and obviously being in competitive sports since the time I was 9 years old, I had some great coaches and good mentors, and they all helped.
Yeah, well, they did a good job.
It's time to ring in the new year right.
Bama, a winner over the Georgia Bulls.
It's the Alabama Crimson Tide and the Michigan Wolverines in the college football playoff semifinal at the Rose Bowl. Our coverage starts at 1 on New Year's Day on your home for Alabama football.
Brought to you by Birmingham Racecourse. BirminghamRacecourse.com. You can be a winner, too.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
With Lars Anderson, myself, Matt Coulter. You also have Noah Haynes at the controls. And we are joined now by color analyst for the Alabama Crimson Tide Sports Network basketball. That is Brian Passing. Brian, I know you got kids. Kids all about Christmas. Have you gotten all your shopping done? Or are you going to do that in Omaha?
You know what? Uncharacteristically, I've gotten all my shopping done, and I've wrapped all my presents. And I am so proud of myself that I would like to dedicate the rest of the show to me and my accomplishment.
We got a sponsor. Brian Passink is a holiday shopping sponsor at the top of the hour.
Thank you.
I'm on my way to
the airport in Tuscaloosa. So flying out to Omaha this afternoon, and another easy game for Alabama on the road, top 10 opponent against the Creighton Blue Jays. So this schedule just gets tougher and tougher as we get closer to SEC play.
Okay, Brian, you know I'm from Nebraska. I grew up in Lincoln, but still spent a lot of time in Nebraska. You must try a Runza. Have you ever had a Runza before?
Have not.
Okay.
Tell me about it.
Please try. Go to Runza. It's not really a fast food place, but it's there'll be a bunch of them around. And just get a regular Runza and French fries, and you can dip the Runza in ketchup, and you absolutely will love it. And I really want to hear your thoughts on it, because it's a big deal for those of us from Nebraska. We're very proud of Runza. So,
I can back him up. They're pretty darn good.
Yeah, I've had Runza shipped.
You brought me one back.
That's right.
Well, listen, I'm sold, and since I don't have any Christmas shopping to do, I'll have time on my hands in Omaha. So I will do it. Tell me about it. What is it exactly?
It's, man, Matt, it's hard to explain, but it's like a beef and cabbage, and it's sort of rolled into a bun. And one of my friends who I went to high school with, his great-grandmother from Germany came up with the recipe, and now there's Runzas all throughout the state of Nebraska, and they purposefully have not expanded out of the Midwest, because it's really a Midwestern kind of comfort food. And in a weird twist, my friend's daughter shows up in Alabama, and she took three of my classes, and for the last class she brought in Runzas for everybody and gave me a Runza hat and a Runza shirt. Okay, this is way too much about Runza.
So she clearly got an A. I mean,
yeah, well, of course.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
She sounds like
a smart girl.
Yeah, when she told me she was from Lincoln, Nebraska, I mean, she got an A right the first day of class, which is a joke to all my colleagues at Alabama. But where is this Alabama team right now? And just your thoughts on the game against Purdue.
Listen, it was a tough loss, but I thought an impressive performance in a lot of ways. Purdue may be the best team in college basketball, and they've got a player in Zach Edey who is confirmed, in my opinion, the most difficult player in the country to guard. 7'4", 300 pounds, consensus national player of the year last year. And he is really good, and Alabama had a hard time defending him. For fouls. So that was difficult. Purdue's really good. They're well coached under Matt Painter. They are one of the few teams in college basketball that had a lot of success last year. They were number one seed. Of course, they lost in the first round, just the second number one seed
to lose a first round game to a 16. But they're one of the few teams that return pretty much everybody. I think they returned six out of their top seven, all five starters. And they are predicted to be right back where they were with a chance to do what Virginia did last time, or the first time a number one seed lost, and that's come back and win the national championship the next year. They're definitely good enough to do that with Zach Edey. And they're not a one-man show. They're really good. Their guards can shoot it. They shot it well late in the second half. And I thought from Alabama's standpoint, they came, they competed. They showed a lot of toughness. Obviously, Mark Sears is playing as well as anybody in the country on the perimeter, and he was spectacular in that game. And I thought Alabama put themselves in a position to win the game, but Purdue just made some plays late. Foul trouble really hurt the Tide, and I thought even though it was a loss, I thought the team got better. And, you know, we'll see where they are tomorrow. This will be a tougher test in terms of a true road environment. Creighton is one of the toughest places to play in the country. They're coming off a loss, which is rare. I'm sure they'll be refocused and re-energized back at home. But, you know, Alabama's had a chance to get in practice gym and the film room and getting better and try to get better on the defensive end. And that's what it's going to take for this team to get to where they want to go offensively. Statistically, the best in the country, number one overall in offensive efficiency in the country. But defense has been up and down. I thought they played pretty well in segments against Purdue. But they're Purdue is such a unique team with Zach Edey. I mean, you're not going to see anyone like Zach Edey, although, you know, say that. Now you got Ryan Kalkbrenner, 7'1", 270, and Malo at Arizona coming up next week. You know, Alabama is going to get a chance to play some of the best big men in the country, and I think they're going to get better as a result of playing these guys.
You know, coming into the season with players going early and transfer portal on, Alabama didn't have a whole lot of guys coming back with experience under Nate Oates. One was Nick Pringle. What is his status? He's back in good graces. Has he refocused?
Yeah, I thought he missed a game against Arkansas State, played a prominent role against Purdue, got in foul trouble like the entire front court for Alabama. He looked ready to roll, excited to be out there. He competed the way that he typically does, and I think I think he's going to get better and better. And he and Mo Wagi have done a good job at the center position, and you know, hopefully they'll have a better game in terms of staying out of trouble and be able to defend and rebound. And both of those guys have had their moments on the offensive end, but where their real value comes is on the defensive end, rim protection, rebounding the ball defensively, because offensively this team has so many different weapons. Yes, they can score, and they're needed to score when opportunity presents itself, but their true value is on the defensive end, and I think they've shown they can get it done on that end.
Is Alabama still kind of feeling out what their identity is going to be this season? And also, we're so short into the season, but has anything surprised you?
Well, you know, I don't know if it's been a surprise. I knew that this team had a chance to be really good on the offensive end. They've gelled a little quicker than I thought. And one of the surprises is Mark Sears. And that's saying a lot, because my expectation level for Mark coming into this year was really high. I mean, he was a second team all-SEC player last year, so I expected him to be really good. But I didn't necessarily think he would be one of the best point guards in the country, and that's exactly what he's been so far this year. And with Grant Nelson and Aaron Estrada, I mean, these guys can score. You've got scoring punch off the bench with Jaren Stevenson, Sam Walters, of course, Rylan Griffin can get it done on both ends of the floor. So I've been surprised with how good this team has looked offensively early on. But defense is where the focus is, and where I think they have the most upside. And I even though they've struggled at times on the defensive end, I look at the individual parts. I look at the effort and toughness and mindset and the willingness to get better on that end of the floor. And I'd be really surprised if this team doesn't continue to grow and get better on the defensive end. And when they do, they have a chance to be really, really good. I mean, this team can outscore you with what they do on the offensive end. And if they're shooting the ball well, can beat anybody in college basketball. But to be the team consistently throughout the year that I know these guys want to be, it's going to come on the defensive end. And I expect them to get better as the year progresses on that end of the floor. And it starts tomorrow against one of the best offensive teams in the country in Creighton.
Brian Passing, Crimson Tide Sports Network, headed to Creighton as Alabama plays tomorrow. As we wrap up, I'm always curious because Lars and I have both been in this situation quite a few times, but traveling with the team is always interesting. Now, do you sit in the same seat? And who's the cut up on the plane?
Well, no, I'm laying low. I'm just thankful they let me fly with them. So I'm trying to lay low and I'll sit over there with the voice of Alabama basketball, Mr. Chris Stewart, of course. And you know, it's a good group of guys. I mean, this is a unique year in that all three assistant coaches are new, a lot of new staff members. So I'm trying to get to know people on these trips. We've just had a few. So I'm looking forward to getting to Omaha and Phoenix next week and getting to hang out with these guys. The ones that I know are great guys and looking forward to kind of getting to know the rest.
Hey, Brian, if you're running late to the plane, will they wait for you?
No. So they don't wait for the radio guy, I can assure you. So I got to get there early. I'm on coach's time. I got to be there 15 minutes before earlier than they want me there, because I know they're not waiting on a measly old radio guy.
Hey, most of the coaches I've been around won't wait for their center. if you're on time, you're late.
Wimp left Latrell Sprewell at the hotel when we were playing LSU. He said, hey, we're leaving at this time. Spree's not on the bus. Let's go. And he took a... I think he took a taxi to the Merrimack Center and didn't start.
Boy, that is all wimp. Have a safe flight. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, guys. Always enjoy it.
Back to wrap up this Friday edition of Big Noon Sports in just a minute.
Hey.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A partly to mostly sunny sky this afternoon, a high 62. Increasingly cloudy tonight, the low 43. Tomorrow cloudy, rain likely at times during the day, the high 60. Sunday, rain ending early in the day, then gradual clearing, the high 57. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 65 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Wow. Another show has flown by. Thanks to Keith Donovan for talking about Bart Starr with us. And, of course, we just wrapped up with Brian Passing. I've always really enjoyed flying with teams. I guess when I think back on it, you were never really a beat writer associated with one single team. So while I know you've literally flown around the world three times, maybe you haven't been a part of that. But, you know, you got players that cut up. You got players that don't. You got coaches that won't put up with anything. You got coaches that won't put up with anything at all if they lose. It's an interesting situation. And now that I think about it more, it's not one a lot of people go through.
No, I mean, I was in it briefly when I embedded with the Scottish Claymores of NFL Europe. And so I traveled around Europe on the charter with them. Actually, it wasn't a charter. We would just travel.
You flew commercial.
travel
I've
coach.
Done that too.
But do you have a memory that sticks out of being on the plane? Because you're right. I mean, crazy stuff happens, and you actually learn a lot about the dynamics of the player relationships when you're on the plane. Because, you know, I mean, some guys just love to tune out and sleep, but other guys, you know, they want to take your money in a game of poker. There's a lot of card playing going on.
Yeah. I think the first time I was really ever exposed with it, I flew with the Stallions, and that was a pro league. So after games, they would have them, a couple of big sandwiches and, three beers. They give them three beers. You know, it's probably a two-hour flight anyway. So the first thing that goes on is the guys that drink beer buy the beer from the guys that don't. And that there's a lot of shuffling going up down the aisles. And then the guys that are drinking the beer get to the back of the plane. That's when they start playing cards. But I can remember coming back from Canada with the Barracudas one time. And it's the roughest flight I've ever been in my life. We hit some air at 30,000 feet. It was more than turbulent in my mind. You know, stuff was falling out of the, you know, the headspace.
Yeah.
Onto players and all that. And I remember, you know, a lot of those players hadn't flown very much, even at that point. And I remember that being frightening. But for the most part, they were fun as hell. Even as a media guy, you know, but you were with the team. You were with the team all year. They got to know you. So, I just have, and it's a really good way to find out a lot more about a team than you ever would in any other circumstance.
Absolutely. And when you spend that much time with the team, it's difficult to maintain that sort of professional distance that you want to, because all of your free time and going out on a Friday night to dinner, you're with the guys on the team, and it's hard not to become friends. And, right. You know, and technically speaking, you probably shouldn't be doing that. But hey, you know, Matt Finkus, that's how I got to know Matt, and we have Matt on all the time, and now he's one of my closest buddies in the world, and I treasure that relationship and the shared experiences that we had in Europe. Hey, real quick, Matt, I can't believe it, but there's 6 bowl games on Saturday, tomorrow, and one of them is Jacksonville State versus Louisiana, and I'm taking Jacksonville State. They're favored by 3. And but you know what? They're tied for 3rd nationally in takeaways with 25. The Raging Cajuns, they are tied for 107th in giveaways with 21. I'm taking the team that takes care of the ball. Well, Jacksonville State.
The turnovers aside, it's their first ever bowl experience. Rich Rod and the Gamecocks. Go JSU. Lars, have a wonderful weekend. We'll do this on Monday from noon to 2. Big Noon Sports. Also, thank you to his timeliness, always, to Noah Haynes. God bless.
The Universal